Hello, St. Louis, and welcome to the STL Leaders Podcast, hosted by Brian Bisking. Brian started this weekly podcast to give a voice to leaders of our community, to share their story, their journey, and the lessons that they have learned along the way. Brian grew up in a small town outside of St. Louis, where he watched his father run a small business and was always interested in how the leaders in his community got where they are. Whether it's a local business leader, a philanthropist, or a celebrity, these are your STL leaders. Join us today, where we will chat with another pillar of our community on this week's episode of the STL Leaders Podcast. And now, your host, Brian Bisking.
Hello, St. Louis, and welcome to this week's episode of the STL Leaders Podcast. On this week's episode, we welcome Kenny Gales, founder of Fallen Brothers. But before we get to this week's episode, let me thank my sponsors. First, NWO IT Services, Synchrony HR, and Beanstalk Web Solutions. And now, to this week's episode with Kenny Gales. Kenny Gales, welcome to the STL Leaders Podcast. I appreciate you finding some time to sit down with me and talk about your new endeavor.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. I appreciate you for having me on this podcast. It's an honor.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, we've known each other quite a while, and we're just down in Disney together and chatting about it. And I was like, look, we got to get you on the podcast to talk about this mission because I think it's a really, really cool mission. I think for our listeners out there who are listening, I think As we get into this episode, I think you'll really see that there's been a lot of thought, there's been a lot of energy put into this launch of this brand, and I don't want to steal too much of Kenny's thunder, but I think you guys will all find this is a pretty cool mission and brand that Kenny has got going here. So just to start off, Kenny is the founder of Fallen Brothers, and we're going to talk to him today about his new whiskey, new bourbon. So with that being said, Kenny, talk to us. Talk about growing up. When did you, I guess, realize that you had this passion as we sit in your whiskey room right now with, I don't even know how many bottles of bourbon or whiskey. So
500 and counting.
500 and counting. So we're not going to, we won't display all of those out here today, but talk to us, like, where did this passion come from?
Yeah, sure. I guess initially it might've started from my parents' kitchen, you know, when I was stealing the Jim Beam out of the cabinet. Filling it back up with apple juice or water, you know. But no, really, I don't really know if that was where the passion started. That was more when I was in high school and doing my party days. But I think the passion really started probably like 8 years ago when I was kind of getting into starting to try some new bourbons, and I kind of had some money to buy some different types of whiskeys and try different bourbons, rye, other whiskeys. And then just developed my palate from there, and then kind of grew from there. And then I obviously, you see all these bottles here. That's where all those came from over the last 8 years. And now I finally got a bourbon room and a bar and all that to be able to enjoy it all. Yeah. So, you know, just enjoying spirits over the years with friends. And then, you know, I guess after that, you know, I'm currently a fireman for Oak Island Fire Protection District. And I had the cool opportunity to do a couple barrel picks to raise money for our community outreach. And our community outreach basically does a lot of things for the community as far as like wheelchair ramps and putting people in hotels if their house catches fire and all that. So I was able to go do these barrel picks, and 100% of the proceeds went back to our community outreach. And then from there on, I kind of just realized, you know, man, this is super awesome, super cool. Why not start my own brand and do the same exact thing, but only give back to families that have lost loved ones in the line of duty?
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, let's dive into that, actually. Let's talk about the organization, Fallen Brothers, and its mission for those out there listening to this episode. Just where did the idea come from, and from the mission perspective? Mm-hmm. How much thought went into that? And just tell us about the actual mission of the whiskey outside of just making good whiskey.
Yeah, sure. Well, to start off, like I always tell people, you know, the goal is to produce exceptional whiskeys, and the goal is to eventually be able to distill exceptional whiskeys. But more importantly, our goal and our mission is to remember exceptional spirits, so to speak. And I think I said that wrong in the beginning. I meant make exceptional spirits, distill exceptional spirits, and then eventually remember exceptional spirits. That's our goal. And you know, this all came about because I am currently a fireman, and I have, you know, a wife that I've been together with for 17 years, and she blessed me with two amazing kids, a 2.5-year-old and a 5-year-old, which, you know, we're just in Disney experience and all that. So just knowing that I have that family and me being a current fireman, it made me realize, you know, it's my duty to be able to take care of my family in just one more way, and also be able to take care of other families along the way as well that have lost a loved one. Because, for example, if I was to die in the line of duty, my family would be taken care of by the organizations that my brand specifically gives back to. So, and that brand, or that organization, is Backstoppers. Backstoppers is an organization that covers Missouri and Illinois, so it directly reflects me in particular and my family. So
talk us about the brand, got the mission out of it, but talk a little bit more about the tie to firefighters and how your two careers are intermingling now.
Yeah, sure. So with our mission, you know, and me being a current fireman, it just builds the story, and you know, it kind of gives more of like a reason for people to become part of this mission and to support our mission. And I just think, you know, this brand is bigger than me and everybody else. It's just, it's about giving back to those families that have lost a loved one. And I don't know if I really answered your question or not.
I think that's the important piece there, is just, you know, this brand is bigger than, like what you said, remembering, not only making excellent spirits, but remembering spirits, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
So, you know, there's so many different whiskey brands out there and bourbon brands, but they all don't have like a mission necessarily like yours, mm-hmm. right? And so I think combining not only your career as a firefighter, but now your career as a, you know, as a whiskey distiller, and mm-hmm. you know, how that intermingles, I think is a pretty cool story. Tell me a little bit about how how did the idea come to you, I guess, is my question. And then how did you, like, for those listening out there, how did you make it a reality, right? Like, if I wanted to start a whiskey, I wouldn't even know where to begin, right? So walk us through kind of that process.
Sure, yeah. So as you know, I got a little bit of an entrepreneurial mindset. You know, I've done started a lot of LLCs, created a lot of businesses. Not all are successful, you know. Bounce house company, lawn care company. Was going to start a beverage company. Obviously, that hasn't taken off anywhere, you know. But my passion has always been in the spirits industry. And so it's just like, you know, finally just me kind of fearing all the loopholes, the paperwork, the process it is to get involved in something like this, you know, kind of kept me from doing it. And you know, it was one of those things, it's like, you know what, finally, I just need to do it, you know. Yeah. And I just jumped in and did it. And you know, with me being a fireman and me wanting to basically be able to take care of my family if something happens to me, you know, the name Fallen Brothers just came straight to me. It was like, you know, when people see that label or that name, they're going to know, correlate the story behind the whole brand just by looking at the title of the brand. So, you know, and then we came up with the motto, crafted and honored, shared in remembrance. You know, I couldn't think of a better motto, you know.
No,
we're crafting spirits in honor of those, and then also sharing them, you know, in remembrance of them. So
absolutely. It's incredible. So talk to us about what was the paperwork? How does that process go? And then how did you find the distillery to help you get this off the ground?
Yeah, sure. So there's different types of certifications and licensures you can get. You know, you got to go through the city, the county, the government. You know, the TTB is a government agency that you got to get, you know, wholesalers permits through. DSP is a distiller's license that we're working on currently getting. You know, so there's a ton of different paperwork, forms, loopholes, you know, back and forth. They're never in a hurry to get all that stuff accomplished.
You mean the government's not in a hurry to do anything?
Yeah.
Except collect our tax dollars?
Right. Well, yeah, they're always in a hurry for that. But yeah, no, they're just, you got to stay on them, and they're just never, this is a drawn out process. You know, sometimes it can take months to even get stuff back. So,
yeah.
So anyway, yeah. And so the process, I guess what your second part of the question was,
how did you pick still 630 for the distillery?
Yeah, sure. So, and that's the other part of the process that kind of keeps people from doing it as well. You know, when you're starting out and you don't have a distillery, you know, to build a distillery costs a lot of money, a lot of capital. You know, if you don't have that, you know, the other route is going the route of sourcing product, you know, and then creating a mash bill and distilling it through another distillery. And my whole goal in mind was to keep our brand in Missouri, because, you know, some years ago, Governor Parsons declared us an official bourbon state. So my goal is to grow the state of Missouri's whiskey. And obviously Kentucky's already had their, all their, you know, winnings and all that stuff. So I'd rather, you know, grow Missouri and keep it in Missouri and, you know, and support Missouri as much as I can. So to get back to your question about how did I partner with Still 630? Well, before I partnered with Still 630, I reached out to numerous different distilleries and stuff like that. And, you know, they told me, you know, I didn't have enough money. They told me I wasn't educated enough. They, you know, they kind of just pushed me away and told me I wasn't big enough, really. You know, some of these distilleries, you know, are selling hundreds of barrels a month. And, you know, I'm starting out. I don't have, you know, any capacity to be able to do any of that. So, you know, they told me they would work with me and all that. And down the road, they kind of just pushed me out the door and gave me some excuse. Well, I ended up trying a Still 630 product and liking it. And I was like, shoot, let me look them up, call them. And I called Still 630, got a hold of Dave Weglars, who's the master distiller and founder of Still 630. We set up a meeting. We've met probably several times. And every time we met, you know, I just realized, you know, like, we just aligned, like his morals, his values, and his ethics just aligned with what our core values are. And with our core values, you know, growing up, I played hockey, and like my coach, he always instilled in us, you know, character, class, and integrity. And every time I met with David, he essentially just portrayed those core values that I had. And so from day one, we hit it off, and we both aligned. And ever since then, we've been a partnership and getting ready to release our first product on 9/11. So
yeah, what I love about that answer is, for those that are listening, I mean, he didn't stop, right? You didn't stop, right? Mm-hmm. You were being pushed to the side. You were not getting calls back. You were not getting, you know, you're not big, or you don't have enough money, or mm-hmm. those types of things. And very easily, you could have just been like, okay, fine, this is just this dream ain't going to become a reality.
Right.
But you persevered and you continue to fight, and that's what makes you a great leader, right? That's a humongous leadership quality that you have. And so shout out to Still 630 for doing this with Kenny. And I think it's going to be, as we continue to get into this episode, I think you guys will really see how cool this brand is becoming and how big I believe it will come. So let's talk a little bit about the differences between whiskey and bourbon, because I heard you say bourbon in there. I heard you talk about rye. You know, I'm like a beginner with bourbon. I used to be a big bourbon guy, and then I kind of got to IPA beer, but I still drink bourbon in the winter. And but I'm nowhere near an enthusiast.
Sure.
So talk to us like the differences between all the types of whiskeys and bourbons, and what is the difference?
Yeah, sure. So as some people may know, not all bourbon is whiskey, but all whiskey is bourbon.
Okay.
So there is definitely a certain criteria, you know. Whiskey is more global, so therefore, you know, there's the aging, the distillation, and there's numerous factors with that are different than bourbon, you know. Bourbon has to be done in the U.S. So with whiskey, it can be done in Scotland, Ireland, Canada, or U.S. Bourbon is only done in the U.S., so it's an American spirit, American bourbon, you know. In order to be a bourbon, basically you can't put it in the barrel above 160 proof. It can't be distilled above 160, but you can't put it in a barrel above 125. So it has to go into the barrel at 125. They have to be new charred oak American barrels. They also have to be considered a bourbon, it has to be aged in a new charred oak American barrel, but it has to be at least 2 years. So now with the whiskey, it doesn't have to do that. Their process can change. They can put it in reused barrels. They can put it in new barrels. They can blend it. They can finish it. You know, it just, at that point, it won't be called a bourbon. You know?
Sure.
So essentially, and then also a bourbon. With a bourbon, it has to be 51% corn. So there's different types of grain. There's corn, rye, malted barley, wheat. So with a bourbon, it has to be at least 51% corn. With a rye, it has to be at least 51% rye. And the mash bill to be constituted, you know, either a bourbon or a rye.
Gotcha.
So,
and then from a whiskey perspective, it doesn't necessarily, like, for your brand, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, talk to us about the make of your brand and the finishing process of yours.
Sure, yeah. So we're releasing a Missouri straight bourbon that is finished with toasted and charred American oak staves. So what I did was I actually took new staves and I toasted and charred them myself and then stuck them in the barrel. So then what we were doing with that, it's called finishing. So then every week we will sample that barrel to taste it and quality control it and not let it get, you know, too oaky or too much vanilla or too much caramel, because there's a fine line and a fine balance when you toast and char. You know, there's a lot of caramel, vanilla notes that come out with that. And if your bourbon that you are releasing in the beginning before you start finishing it has a huge red fruit nose or palate or taste right off the bat, and you go and finish it, you could end up taking all that away by making it too oaky with the charred oak staves that you put in there. So, like, you know, essentially with the finish process, you can finish it however long you want. You know, you just quality control it until you say it's ready to pull, you know. And gotcha. That's what we did. You know, for several weeks we took samples, tasted it, you know, wrote notes down, talked about it, discussed it, and finally came to a conclusion that, you know, it was ready to be pulled and bottled. And so, yeah.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's complicated.
Yeah.
I lost you 2 minutes ago. I mean, I don't know how you know how
to do it. Yeah, I probably rambled on.
No. I'm just saying, it's like, it wasn't, I mean, it's not an easy process, obviously. Mm-hmm. It's a very critical, detailed process that you had to go through to obviously make this brand in this first release. So mm-hmm. Let's talk about the launch. For sure. Those who are listening, we'll have on our Facebook page, on our website, stlleaderspodcast.com. But Kenny's brand here, Fallen Brothers, is launching on 9/11. Mm-hmm. When there's pre-sales out there right now, correct?
Yep.
And they can find those where? At your website?
Yeah, fallenbrotherscraftedspirits.com.
Yep, so you can go on there and find these. But talk to us about the importance. When we were in Disney, guys, Kenny and I were sitting at a bar, probably having a bourbon or something, and we were talking about the brand. And when he told me kind of, you know, why 9/11, what the actual toast time is, I mean, I'll let him get into the details, but I kind of got goosebumps. I thought it was a really cool story. I thought it was a really great way to launch this brand, and so I want him to share that with us today.
Yeah, so it definitely gives me goosebumps too, just thinking about it and talking about it too. So what we decided to do was come out with a bang and just release a 9/11 commemorative series 343 release. And what that basically is the 343 is the 343 firemen that died that day on 9/11. And basically, the whole idea behind it is to remember those 343, you know, crafted in honor, shared in remembrance, and that's our goal to do. And so with that being said, our release is on 9/11, and, you know, the doors of the distillery at still 6:30 downtown will open up at 8:46 a.m., and that's when we'll let everybody in. And that time right there was the time the first plane hit the first tower. So that's pretty crazy, you know. That gives you chills just thinking about that. And hopefully, you know, we got a line out the door ready to come in so we can remember these guys. And then at 9:03, we're going to do a complimentary toast for everybody that's there of the 343 release, a moment of silence, and then we're going to toast to remember all these guys, you know, that sacrificed it all that day. So that's pretty cool. So if you're available on 9/11, that would be an awesome experience, you know, an awesome time for you to show up. Backstoppers will be out there giving a little speech, you know, talking about our partnership as well. And then that's Metro West Fire Protection District Chief Mike Krause will be down there. So
wow. Yeah. And so I don't want to steal the thunder as I ask this question, but it probably is going to steal the thunder, the money you're giving back on the bottles of that release.
Yeah, sure. So $9.11 off of every bottle sold on this release will go back to Backstoppers. Yeah. So, and Backstoppers is an organization in Missouri and Illinois that gives back to, supports families that have lost a loved one in the line of duty.
Yeah. So, you know, think about that. There's so many different ties to 9/11. I can almost guarantee you, as you're listening to this episode right now, you know exactly where you were at that day, what you were doing. I mean, I know for a fact I was at Fox Creek Golf Course. I was in the bar at the morning because I was getting ready to head with my coach to the BMW Championship that was at Belle Reve that year. And when the second plane hit, we were in the car. When the third plane happened, we were actually on the course, and when the fourth plane hit, they canceled the tournament. So I remember like it was yesterday, and that was, you know, shoot, I was 15, 16 years old when that happened. So, you know, we're coming up on what, I guess that what it is, what's going to, how many years has it been now? 23 years.
Yeah.
So coming up close on that, which is, and I also was telling Kenny.
Wait, 13 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
13 years.
13 years. Yeah. I don't want to say 20.
showing our ages.
Yeah, I was going to say, okay, I know. 13 years. But I also was telling Kenny, my grandfather who fought in World War II, his birthday was 9/11. So I just that day I will always remember exactly where I was at. I think Alan Jackson even has a song, "Remember When,"
yeah.
And he talks about in that, you know, in that song about remember where you were at. Like I can remember right where I was at. Where were you at?
I was actually, I believe, I went to a Lutheran school called Zion Lutheran Harvester, Missouri. I believe I was actually in history class. I can't remember the teacher's name. But I do remember I was in school that day.
Yeah, so, as most people were.
And we were I remember watching it, you know?
Yeah. Well, now, I mean, most people were in school our age, at least that day. My father-in-law has a really incredible story about that day that he shared with me a number of years ago. And my father-in-law was the CIO for Boeing at the time when that happened. And his office overlooked Lambert Airport. And he had a beautiful view of Lambert Airport. And I think the story is kind of sad, but kind of funny at the same aspect. So, you know, he's sitting in his office and he's like, usually, you know, there's planes coming in, coming out, and I can see all of it happen. And he goes, and all of a sudden, like, you know, the airport just shut down. Like there was no planes coming. He goes, and I didn't have a TV in my office, so I really didn't know what was going on. He goes, so I walked out of my office and I walked into the CEO's office and he goes, where have you been? And my father-in-law says, what's going on? And the first two planes had already hit. He had no idea that the planes had hit because he didn't have a TV in his office.
Mm-hmm.
And the CEO got on the phone and called his assistant and said, "Get Don a TV in his office now." he'll tell you it was like chilling that, you know, there was no planes leaving Lambert, there was no planes coming into Lambert, fighter jets scrambling from all over, you know, the areas. Just a crazy day that, you know, I'll never forget.
Yeah, gives me goosebumps every year, and especially the fact that, you know, I'm currently a fireman and, you know, we hear about it, see it, and, you know, our honor guard does stuff on that day as well, and it's a historic day and nothing better than to remember those guys that sacrificed it all that day.
Yeah, and I mean, I've watched so many documentaries on it. You see these firefighters just running in. I mean, even as the first tower already had fallen.
Mm-hmm.
Running into the second tower to try to save as many people as they could, and you know, just a devastating event that happened. But so many heroes were made that day, and I've read, you know, stories about these firefighters. I actually did a 9/11 podcast episode. If you guys want to go back and listen to it, on the 10th anniversary of this, me and Bo Matthews did an entire podcast episode all around 9/11. We talked about some of the heroes that were there that day. We talked about a lot of things. So I would highly recommend you go back and listen to that episode from a few years ago with Bo Matthews. It was a good one.
Yeah, awesome. I'll definitely go back and listen to that again and check that out again. I think I might have forgot, you know, to mention the significance of the time that we're doing the toast that day. To remember those guys, those 343. The significance of that time, I remember telling you guys 8:46 was the time the first plane hit the first tower. Well, 9:03 when we do the toast, that's the when the second plane hit the second tower. So, you know, that's going to definitely give me goosebumps and maybe tear up a little bit. So,
For sure.
So I think a moment of silence and to be able to toast and remember those guys is going to be pretty awesome. It's going to be an honor, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Talk to us about the future of the brand. What's the future look like?
Yeah, I think the future's pretty bright, even though we haven't released our first bottle yet. But, you know, we got a good following now on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, you know, we got a website. So we got the release coming in 9/11. We're actually getting ready to do a barrel pick for our second release, which is going to be in November.
Nice.
Well, that release will be 1 of 5. So
1 of 5?
It's going to be 1 of 5. So there's going to be 5 in a series. So. And what that series is going to be depicting, major historic events in history in the fire service, like historic events in the fire service. So if like the Chicago Blaze, like a New York crisis, there's also the Halifax one where it was the largest non-nuclear explosion in history. So each one of those bottles is going to depict a different event that happened in fire service history, like wow. like a big event. So, and each bottle will have a charm on it, kind of with a little sentimental piece to go along with it. So it'll be awesome for bourbon collectors, enthusiasts, you know, to be able to get each one so they can put it on their shelf and be able to look back and be like, wow, that's pretty cool. And
heck yeah.
And then they can sit there and tell their friends a story and be able to say, yeah, these guys, all these events were major events in fire service history. And you know, we can sit to this and remember it. So
yeah, that's awesome, man.
So that's part of it. So that'll be over the next year. We'll have those five releases in that series, and then we'll do another 9/11 one. So the 9/11 one will be our premium release every year. It'll come in like a wooden box or some sort of corrugated gift box, you know, to depict, you know, being a premium,
sure,
premium release. You know, because that's a major event in history that needs to be remembered every year. Also, we're currently in the process. We've got some land picked out for our tasting room, so we're buying probably this year or by spring of next year, and then we'll start working on our tasting room and eventually have our first still and hopefully be producing some spirits. You know,
that's awesome.
You know, whiskey's my passion, but I may have to produce some gin and some rum, you know, to keep the doors open. But you know, that's
rum and vodka. You're talking about language.
Yeah, right? I'll do some vodka just for you. You know,
what about tequila? I like tequila too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, tequila can only be tequila in Mexico. If I make it here, it's going to be an agave spirit. So,
that's true.
Mexico has the rights to tequila, but in the U.S., you can make a spirit called agave.
That's true.
So yeah, so that's kind of the future. You know, we got the five releases, the 9/11 on next year as well, and then looking at building out a tasting room with the distillery and have some barrels put up, and then, you know, have a charcuterie venue and all that with wine and
that's awesome.
And all that. So yeah.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So the future is definitely bright, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of that, I mean, talk to us about why you think that not only will St. Louis embrace this, mm-hmm. but I think fully support this. I mean, that's my view on it. But talk to you about, like, just, you know, way more about the firefighters in the St. Louis metro area. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like this is something they're not only are they going to support, but friends of theirs will support and family of theirs will support. Talk to us about kind of how you've thought about that, how are pre-sales mm-hmm. going, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so pre-sales are going pretty good so far. You know, we've got several bottles sold already. I think St. Louis will embrace it because, number one, we're a St. Louis brand. Number two, we've kept our sourcing and our distillation in Missouri itself. You know, the distillery we're using or partnering with, Still 630, is downtown St. Louis in an old Hardee's building. You know,
yeah.
He likes to call it a French restaurant called Hardee's. You know, but you know, but if you're ever down there, it's right by Busch Stadium. A little small. It's in an old Hardee's building. It's pretty neat little place. However, I think since we're using a Missouri whiskey, I think, or a Missouri spirit, so to speak, I think Missouri will embrace it. The organization that we are partnered with as well in Backstoppers is basically their area is Missouri and Illinois. So it directly affects those in Missouri and Illinois, you know, that are firemen. So, you know, if something's ever happened to their family, Backstoppers is there to support them and take care of whatever they need, you know, their families need. Number two, I'm from St. Louis and I work in St. Louis, and the story behind the brand, you know, I'm a current fireman in O'Fallon, Missouri. So what's better? Who wouldn't want to support when it's exactly. all in your state, you know?
Yeah, so. For sure. Well, and I think St. Louis is one of those towns, you know, I have the fortune or misfortune, however you want to phrase that, of traveling the Midwest in my role as VP of Sales for Synchrony HR. Mm-hmm. And St. Louis is the only town in the 10 states that I cover that is the biggest, smallest town you'll ever be in, right? Mm-hmm. What high school did you go to? You know, that question, do you know so-and-so? Or, oh, that's my brother-in-law. And that's just St. Louis. And I think, to your point, not only one, do I think St. Louis will support it because it's a local brand. Mm-hmm. I think St. Louis will support it because St. Louis is a very giving town. Even though a lot of people don't realize that, there's a lot of giving in this community to support our other fellow friends in mm-hmm. the St. Louis community. And I jokingly tell my wife all the time, I'd love to live on an ocean. I'd love to live on a lake, but St. Louis is home.
Or in Disney.
Or in Disney, yeah. But St. Louis is home. Yeah. Like, this is our home.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
So,
can you always end this podcast by asking my guests to leave us with one piece of advice? That could be on personal life, business life. It could be on anything you want to share. This is your time to just give our listeners out there a piece of advice that they can walk away with from this episode.
Yeah, so recently I heard a quote that said, you know, take time for your wellness or you'll be forced to take time for your illness. That really hit home for me because it's like, it's true because, you know, without my wellness and me taking the initiative to make sure, you know, I'm physically fit or eating right or, you know, being healthy, you know, I wouldn't be here for my family or I wouldn't be able to continue on with this dream of owning a whiskey brand or, you know, building a distillery. So for me, that quote hit home the other day when I saw that. I thought that was really, really neat. And I think that quote correlates to what advice I would give is to follow your dreams, you know. Truly, like I said, I've started way too many businesses and half of them haven't even succeeded, you know. You know, a couple of them succeeded a little bit, but, you know, I've always wanted this brand. I always thought I was never going to be able to get it because of the money, the loopholes, people telling me, no, you're not smart for doing this, you're never going to succeed, you blah, 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 you name it, etc. So, follow your dreams. You only live one life, you know. Do what you want to do, not what everybody else is telling you not to do. So
that's great advice.
Yeah.
That's great advice. I mean, I don't know how many times, you know, my first role in sales, you know how many times I was told no on the phone, right? Now I look back at my career and I've made myself very successful in what I do. Being told no is not a bad thing. I always tell people, when you get it's a motivation. No, you're one no closer to the yes. Yep. So no is not a bad thing. It's just one, you got that out of the way. You're going to get that yes.
Yeah, and I think with the amount of no's I got, you know, in the beginning was, and the naysayers, it motivates you. It forced me to say, you know what, I've got to do this, you know. It's
kind of proving wrong.
Yeah.
So exactly.
It just grew that passion, that drive, so.
Yeah, awesome. Well, on behalf of the STLers podcast, thank you for being a great STL leader. Thank you for joining us today to share the brand. You guys can find the brand again at FallenBrothersSpirits.com.
FallenBrothersCraftedSpirits.com.
BrothersCraftedSpirits.com.
A little long, sorry about that.
You can also find it on STLLeadersPodcast.com. We'll have a link to the page. And we appreciate you listening on whatever streaming device you're listening from. On behalf of myself and Kenny, thank you.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate it. Cheers.
Cheers. Oh.